Welcome back to Launch and Learn after our long hiatus. I apologize for our delayed.
I'll be back.
Okay. I apologize for our delayed start after vacation, but now we'll Emir Tashem be back on our weekly basis. And if you'll recall, we had left off at the very beginning of Pesukei Dezimra, and we had been about to start a discussion of Hodu, which immediately follows, at least in Nosach Ashkenaz, after Baruch She'amar. So as we discussed a little bit more generally speaking, the focal point, the climax, the crescendo of the Pesukei Dezimra is Ashrei, and the other things that were instituted and added to the Pesukei Dezimra are really an accompaniment to Ashrei. And as we know, Baruch She'amar and Yishtabach are the bookends, and everything in between, before and after Ashrei, was sort of like the window dressings, the additional stuff. So the question becomes, Hodu, where did it come from? Why did we say it? Why do we say it here in particular? And how did it make it into the Pesukei Dezimra? Why did it get added into the permanent text of the Siddur?
Also, when I started, like, dominating, I always started saying it, when I came to SK, no one ever told us to say it.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, so first of all, it's not necessarily the primary part of Pesukei Dezimra. It's really a sort of, quote-unquote, a secondary addition. But we'll see why it made it in and why we say it specifically in this slot in the Pesukei Dezimra. Happens to be that Nusach Svard starts Pesukei Dezimra with Hodu, and in Ashkenaz we put it after Baruch She'amar. But let's just dive in. So today we're going to focus a little bit more on the sort of general idea and the background of Hodu, and then as we move into, it's a relatively long tefillah, so we'll move into sort of the actual text and the translations, maybe today, but probably more likely starting next week, Emir Tashem. So just in terms of explanation of why we put it here, where it comes from, and the sourcing, so there's a sefer called the Archos Chaim. I believe there's more than one with the same title. I'm pretty sure that the one that I'm quoting from is the one that was written by the Rush, one of the Rishonim. I'm pretty confident that that's the correct specific sefer with that title. And the Rush there explains in the Archos Chaim that we have a custom to recite Hodu after Rabbi Yishmael, which is that part at the very end of the Korbanos that we say before Mizmor Shir, where it goes through the different ways in which the Torah is darshaned, and we have a custom to say it after Rabbi Yishmael, which is the end of the Korbanos section of the Siddur. And he quotes from the Sefer HaEshkol, which was written by another one of the Rishonim, who explains that the source, the way in which we came up with Hodu, or not came up with it, but that we thought to put it into this context of davening, is that David HaMelech instituted the custom to sing this song. Specifically, he wrote it and taught it to the Levium, who were in charge of the choir, and he taught it to them so that it can be sung while they were transporting the Aron into this Ohel, this tent that he had made in Yerushalayim, in Ir David, to house and host the Mishkan and the Aron in particular, until eventually, at a later date, Shlomo HaMelech was going to build the Beis HaMikdash. As we know, David HaMelech wanted to, but Natan HaNavi told him that it wasn't for him to do, it was for his son Shlomo. So in the interim, in the time from when he brought the Aron and the different parts of the Mishkan to reside in Yerushalayim, up until the point where they were going to build a permanent structure, as they were carrying the Aron, he composed this song to sing. And it starts with the beginning from Hodu Lashem Kiru Bishmo, and that beginning portion, at least to sort of the middle of the Hodu section of the Siddur, is this song that David HaMelech composed and taught the Levium to sing while they were transporting the Aron. And not only did they sing it in that particular instance when it was being carried from place to place, but they also actually instituted a more permanent minog and more permanent custom to sing the song, specifically when they were bringing the Korban Tamid in the morning and in the evening. We learned already about the Korban Tamid very briefly. We touched on it for a moment earlier in the first semester, where we discussed how that's a portion of the Siddur is the Korbanos, and the Korban Tamid in particular, which is one that was brought on a daily basis, both in the morning and in the evening as well. So when they would bring each Korban Tamid once in the morning and once in the evening, they would sing these songs as well. The choir of the Leviyah would sing this particular song as well. In the morning, when they would bring the Korban Tamid of the morning, so the Leviyah would sing from the beginning, from Hodu Lashem, Kiru Vishmo, up until Uvneviyeh Al Ta'areyu, which is, if you look in the Siddur, the first kind of like chunk, the first kind of excerpt, rather, is until there. And then when they would bring the Korban Tamid of the Erev, of the evening, Ben Arabayim, they would sing from Shiru Lashem until Vahalel Lashem, which if you look in is like sort of halfway through what we have in our Siddur as Hodu. So that those two chunks, those two sections, were the songs that were sung by the Levium while they would bring the Korban Tamid. And just in terms of contextualizing how it ended up in this part of the Siddur, we had just said Korbanos in the beginning of the Siddur before we arrived at Baruch She'amar, and now we put in the Hodu, which is an accompaniment to the Korban Tamid, which is again one of the Parshios of the Korbanos, which we recite in the morning in our Siddur, and that's why just logically in terms of the order of the Siddur, it made sense to put in sort of close proximity to the Korbanos and the Korban Tamid in particular. So that's why we have it in the beginning of Pesukei Dezimra. So again, just in terms of broadening our scope and looking at the rest of Hodu as well, and the entire thing in its entire context. So we have this a continuation beyond those two sections of the song, where we continue on, and we go for another few paragraphs, quote unquote, and we end up all the way at the end. It's the very end of where we go up till, and then we continue on with the rest of our Pesukei Dezimra. But how did we get that? The rest of that part? So there's a Gemara, Yerushalmi, Maseches Brachos, from the Yerushalmi version of the Talmud, of the Gemara, where there's a quote from Chazal that these psukim, from sort of Romamu Hashem, which is in the middle-ish of Hodu until the end, they should never leave your lips, and therefore we accompany that chunk of psukim with the earlier sections as well, because once we're singing this song and we continue on through the rest of the psukim of that perek of Tehillim that David HaMelech composed and wrote, we continue on with these words that are very ideal to say as Hallel and Shevach to Hashem, because they are specifically positive things to say. And the Gemara in Yerushalmi, Chazal tell us that we should never have them be off our lips. We should always be saying these psukim in particular, because they are such good and proficient and efficient praises of Hashem and songs to Hashem. There's another reason why we have Hodu, and we include the entirety of Hodu as well, and that is because within Hodu, there are 10 expressions of Hoda'a. Hodu, Hoda'a, right? So there's 10 expressions of Hoda'a. And why are there 10 expressions of Hodah, or what do they correspond to? So there's two things that they correspond to. One is the Eser Makos, the 10 plagues that Hashem brought against the Mitzrim. And additionally, there's also 10 Nisim, 10 miracles, which Hashem performed for Bnei Yisrael at the Yamsuf. And those 10 Lashonos, those 10 phrasings or expressions of Hodah, of thanksgiving or at least recognition, depending on how you prefer to translate the word Hoda'a into English, those 10 expressions of Hoda'a serve to correspond to those different groups of 10. So just by way of sort of clarifying what are the 10 things that happened by the Yom Suf. So the following list, and again, some of them kind of overlap, but we end up with approximately a list of 10 specific separate things. So first of all, Hashem split the sea. He made some sort of division in the ocean. And not only did he make some sort of division in the ocean, but also there was some sort of roof or covering or some sort of protection from above in the sort of alleyways that were created. And also in between each section of water, there was completely dry land on the floor. So that's number one, or number one and a half, right? Then after that, also, the floor was made into like clay, or like a harder type of floor that it could actually be really walked on and traveled across, as opposed to like the wet sand that would be at the bottom of the ocean, which is obviously a lot more challenging to traverse and to walk across. The next one would be that Hashem made the water crumble. It's not entirely clear exactly what that means, but that's the way it's described. The next one would be that he made the water like rocks, that it was very hard, that the way it's described is that the taninim, the whales and sort of large amphibious creatures would like bump up against it, because it was a solid, hard thing that they couldn't penetrate and get through into the dry lanes to travel. Also, another one, the next one, is that there were 12 separate lanes and alleys, one for each shevet, to get across the Yam Suf. The next one is that they made piles or heaps of the water. The next one is that there were walls created from those sort of piles or heaps that separated out and stayed sort of stagnant and static. Another one is that the water from the ocean was made into potable, sweet drinking water that the Bnei Yisrael could drink as they were traveling through the Yam Suf. And then the final two, the water was frozen in place. If you know anything about water, it never really stays still, and the cells are constantly moving, but it was frozen in its place, and it was put in exactly where it should be and stay the entire time that they were crossing. And additionally, the last and final miracle of the 10 is that the water was made, the walls of the water were made completely clear and completely transparent and translucent so that the B'nai Yisrael could see each other as they were going through. It was a very reassuring thing to be able to see the other Shvatim as well, because then you didn't have to worry and think, oh, what happened to everyone else while we're in our lane in the middle. And as opposed to water, which has different properties in terms of how light reflects and refracts through or off of water, it was made completely clear like a glass window that it could be perfectly seen through and to witness the other Shvatim traveling through as well and remaining safe. So the 10 expressions of Odah correspond to both the 10 Makos as well as the 10 of those Nisim that we just described and enumerated from Kriyas Yamsuf. And that is why we have that full text with all 10 Lishonos, all 10 expressions of Hoda'ah. And also we say it in this particular location because it is something that corresponds to and is related to the bringing of the Korban Tamid, or the two Korbanos of the Tamidin. And we had just completed at the end of the Korbanos section of the Siddur with a recitation of the Parshios of the Korbanos, the Korban Tamid in particular. And then we read some Mishnayos as well in that section of the Siddur, which detail the process of bringing those Korbanos. So we followed up with these songs of praise and Hoda'ah, which were sung in the Mishkan and eventually in the Beis HaMikdash to accompany the bringing of those particular Korbanos and offerings. If Yirtzeh Hashem, next week we'll continue on with going into the text itself, and we'll break down what we're really saying so we get a better understanding of exactly what we are accomplishing and doing during this section of the Pesukei de Zimra.